It is now my pleasure to introduce our guest speaker for this morning. Jett Brewer is a trans man who is transitioning midlife. He has held the positions of vice president and co-chair of TransSASC. He has also been on many boards and committees with such organizations as Clean City Pride and Camp Firefly. For several years, he did peer counseling, advocated, lobbied, and educated everyone who would listen about trans issues. Most recently, he has put volunteering aside to focus on his own healing journey. He is breaking his silence now, he indicates, because of his respect for the Unitarian Fellowship of Regina and the relationships he has built with some of the members here. And we are very honored by that. Jett.
No, there we go. Going. All right. Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to thank everyone for coming this morning, and I'd like to thank Joanna in particular for asking me to come and speak today. I'm in the midst of a very bad cold, so I'll do my best here. If I don't shake hands and things like that today, that's the reason behind that. And thanks, Jim, for giving me more of a voice than I have today with the microphone. The Unitarian Fellowship of Regina, many of you don't know how many connections I have to this place, but there are quite a few. I feel extremely comfortable in this building because I've actually stood here and spoken before, because the fellowship has been so gracious as to have loaned this facility many times to TransSASC for events that we've held, as well as to Queen City Pride for events that as a community we've held here. And we're very, very grateful for that. Many of our organizations are limited on funds, and having your charitable assistance has been wonderful, and just the support of your members, just some wonderful people here. I know Jim in many, many ways. Used to babysit his dog. he's helped with the trans radio show at CJTR. And I've actually put my life in his hands multiple times over the last 5 years, because he's the steers person on our dragon boat team for Amnesty International. So thank you, Jim, for keeping me safe. And other members such as Hillary from Amnesty, who I really respect. And thank you for bringing up Stephen Lewis. He's one of my heroes, and I've had the opportunity of hearing him speak in person. Very inspiring. There's so many connections here that make me feel comfortable. One of the other things is that I used to work across the street for 12 years. I worked at the Royal Saskatchewan Museum, and so I had an office both in the main building and across the street here at the annex. So very familiar. I think Jeremy spoke last week, was it? Rabbi Jeremy Parnes. I've known Jeremy and had the privilege of attending the synagogue and his services as well. Those are big shoes to fill. He's a very eloquent speaker and a very good singer, too. I won't try to do that. I have 20 minutes, so it's a little overwhelming to try to give you a trans 101, a gender, sexuality, diversity 101, to try and give my life story, to try and give each of you something that will be important or meaningful for you to take from this this talk. Every person here has had a different experience in their life as far as gender and sex and sexuality is concerned. Everyone here has a different level of knowledge, different questions. I can't answer it all in 20 minutes. I've provided Joanne with some resource links, and if we aren't able to answer questions today, possibly questions could be forwarded to her, and then I could try my best to find you additional resources or information or connections for those things. Um, I'm going to start off with another connection that I have to the Unitarians. One time I was here for an event, and I noticed downstairs there was a memorial for David Johnson up on the wall. And I had the fortunate experiences of spending time with David many years ago and going to sweats at his home. And I had lost touch with him, and so it was very unfortunate that I found out about his passing this way, but just wanted to acknowledge him as being a very special person and unique in being a white person living traditional Native ways and performing Native ceremonies. And when Joanna had initially contacted me, she was looking for somebody with a two-spirited background or identification. And I understand hopefully in the future there'll be somebody that can come and speak specifically to that. Myself, I was involved in a documentary where I did identify as two-spirited. I'm white. I have no Native blood in me. But in college, I studied traditional Native arts and was living in the Native community and was living the lifestyle and following the traditions. And an elder gave me that term of two-spirited to use to identify with. I do not any longer use that term to describe myself because I'm no longer living that culture. It isn't a part of my life anymore. But I just wanted to share that terminology is something that evolves, and the original term two-spirited was coined in 1994 in the States, and it has a very specific meaning to a very specific group of people. And since that time, it has been used in many different ways to mean many different things, and I hope you can get someone in to clarify all that. I don't feel qualified to give you all the different definitions and things like that. But it's become an umbrella term, and a lot of Aboriginal people who have lost connections with their own traditions and their own communities, their own terminology that would have been used to describe different genders and sexualities and things, have embraced that term, and it has now become mainstream. And so I just wanted people to understand that it has a lot deeper history and meaning, and it's very interesting to look into that and find that out. So out of respect for all Aboriginal cultures, to acknowledge that. Terminology is absolutely out of control in the gender and sex and sexuality diverse community. We have so many people that are inventing terms to describe themselves that they feel comfortable with. We have terms that are being used to mean different things geographically. So in one city, they might use this term to mean something. In another city, it might mean something totally different. You have academia trying to catch up with all of these new terms and trying to forge specific ones that everybody can agree on, which is extremely difficult. So if any of you are feeling overwhelmed by the number of terms or inadequate in being able to use them effectively or appropriately, you are not alone. Even people, you know, living those realities have a difficult time, and there's even contention, you know, within those communities about how to use those terms, when and where and why. So I would love to be able to stand here and say, this term means this, this is how you use it, this is, you know, all these things, and give you a clear path so that you feel comfortable. Unfortunately, in this time of evolution, that's not going to happen. I can point you to resources, and you can read up yourself and see the similarities and see where some of these terms are going. And if you don't feel comfortable using them, you know, don't worry about it. It's all about respect more than it is about getting it right, as far as I'm concerned. We all need to give each other space to get it wrong once in a while. And I think that being open to things evolving, and we may have learned them one way, and they may change, being open to that evolution, too, is important. I identify as a transgender man. I was born and assigned female at birth, and my story is unique. Every individual story is unique, and I think it's important to realize that there isn't a a stereotype. There isn't a blanket story that fits anybody that's either gay or trans or any of these different things. Everybody in the world has their own experiences, their own makeup, and so when I speak for myself and my own experiences, what I've learned, and I don't speak on behalf of the trans community or anyone else, because we are all different. We've all learned different things and had different experiences. I am very stereotypical. I am very much on the masculine end of the spectrum, and growing up I was into baseball. I was the only girl in Little League baseball in Lethbridge. I wore Montreal Expos clothes and baseball caps and stuff. I love cars and motorcycles and things. I'm very, very stereotypical. It was a very difficult thing for me to be the head of TransSask when I learned the diverse nature of gender, because I was the stereotype and I didn't represent all of these people that don't have a place yet, or don't have terminology, or don't have acceptance, or don't even understand themselves and can't find labels and things for themselves. So my learning curve has been as big as everybody else's, even though I am living this reality. Growing up, I never knew anybody that was transgender. I never knew anybody that was even gay. Didn't know what any of it meant. It was all science fiction. And when I went away to college, I met lesbians, and I fell into a couple of relationships there, and I felt that that sort of fit me a little better than when I had tried to date men. Something still wasn't quite right there. It still didn't quite feel like it perfectly fit. And I guess that's the nature of, if you're given options A and B, one of them might feel better than the other. But then when the options are opened up and you're given options C, D, E, then you can more closely match to who you really are and what you really feel. And it wasn't until I was, until I moved to Regina, that things started to evolve beyond that two-option system for me. I had been kicked out of my church for being a lesbian, and I had been seeing a church psychologist here in Regina when I moved here in 1994, and to try and go straight and be the good girl and make everyone happy and do what I thought was the right thing to do. And at the end of a long time with this gentleman, he said, you know, there's really nothing wrong with you. He said, this is really who you are. And he said, I just can't stand up to the church for you. And I said, well, I don't expect you to, because you'll lose your job, and you're doing amazing things for all the people that you are helping in your job. And he had some questions. There were things like, he gave me an assignment about drawing myself as a child every day, to try and release some feelings and things like that. And sometimes I would draw a little boy, and he confused about that. And if I go back through my whole life, I see how the dots all connect. At the time, I never could, because I didn't have any terminology for it. Like my mom said, she always suspected that this was the issue, but she didn't have any terminology. She didn't have any support resources or anything like that. So, and she didn't want to put ideas in my head by mentioning anything. So she just loved me for who I was, and I am eternally grateful. I have the greatest mom in the world. So she went through a lot, because from the time I hit puberty, I went into a deep depression, and I went from being an honor student to being a dropout. I didn't completely drop out of school, but I wasn't there. And I was in and out of the psychiatric hospitals from the time that I was 13 until 2009, I think, was the last time that I was admitted to hospital. I was on every kind of medication, given every kind of diagnosis, and nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. And I think there's a lot of people out there in the world that have issues that they don't understand either, and so I'm really glad that things are changing and information and freedoms are happening. I have a really long-winded formal talk that gives all kinds of historical and things, but I really don't have time to go through all of that. I can share that with Joanne afterwards too if she wants. For me, how I figured out what was going on with me was I hosted my high school reunion, my 20th high school reunion. And for me, it was like a second chance to get to know these people that I had never been able to be friends with in school, because I was never in school. I was in the hospital, or I was depressed and couldn't make social connections. And when I hosted the reunion, I spent 2 years talking to people about what makes them happy and if what they thought would make them happy in high school is what makes them happy as an adult, and brought back all kinds of memories and things. And at the end of the reunion, a little voice said inside my head, well, that was your Academy Award-winning performance. And I thought, oh, no, I'm going crazy. I have voices in my head. And I wanted to know what that meant. And so I put myself back into therapy, and within a couple of sessions it came out that I was transgender, and that my performance was that I had always been pretending to be female, that I'd always tried to be somebody that I wasn't, and that I had stuffed my true self deep down in a little box someplace and wasn't even aware that they were there. And through the help of the counselor that I had, who had never dealt with transgender issues, so people can't accuse her of putting any ideas into my head, we were able to sort through a lot of things and work through issues. And like I said, this was science fiction to me, so it scared me at first. I had no idea what it meant, how many people were out there dealing with this. And so I had to do a lot of research. And a lot of allies are in this position now, too. Where do you go for research? How do you believe what's true and what's not? And what's up to date and what's not? And so I spent 6 months, thank goodness for the internet, the positive side of the internet, researching all of this. And before I even told anyone, I'm married. I didn't want to tell my wife. I didn't want to tell my mother, my siblings, anyone, that this was what had come out in therapy, until I understood what it meant, until I could own it, and until I understood what consequences there would be to coming out, and what my options were as far as transitioning and things like that. And so after 6 months, I told my family, and there was a few hiccups, but everyone I had met up to that date who was transgender had lost their family, had lost their friends, had lost their jobs, had moved away from their supportive communities, had lost their religion, all kinds of horrible things. And so I knew that I had to take that risk by coming out and potentially losing everything, because the alternative was to stay depressed and suicidal and unfulfilled and dragging everyone else in my life down because of my depression. I wasn't helping anyone. I wasn't a positive influence. I wasn't able to do the things in life that I wanted to do. And so when I came out, I anticipated that I would lose it all. And I didn't. I am one of the very few and the luckiest people that I know. And I've taken that luck, and that has pushed me to do the volunteer work that I've done to help and give back, because there's so many people that can't, because they don't have that support behind them. They don't have the strength to come out, and they don't have the strength to speak out and do the things that I was able to do the last 5 years. That's changing. That's a positive thing that's changing, though, because as we have more and more people coming out, more and more acceptance, more and more education, and the younger generations coming out, they aren't as damaged. They're getting help sooner. People aren't facing the exact extreme obstacles that I felt, and what I have dealt with is even minor compared to the people that came before me in years past. So it's a very hopeful, positive thing. there's a lot of academic discourse and debate, and what I'm excited about is the fact that science is catching up and that it is no longer really a debate. When you have organizations like the World Health Organization, the Canadian government, the Saskatchewan Human Rights Commission, Saskatchewan Health, when you have all of these organizations around the world recognizing, acknowledging, validating gender issues to the extreme, there really isn't a debate anymore. Unfortunately, there's so many people in the world that still don't have the education, that don't have the life experiences, haven't had the one-on-one with people, that they still feel it's a debate. And that is going to take us time, but the overall picture is hopeful. We are making great strides. We are moving forward. The progress that we've made in the last 6 years alone wasn't forecast to be made for the next 30 years. So here in Saskatchewan, things like this the Saskatchewan Health website, now including a whole section on gender and transition surgeries and things, and the Human Rights Board, we were told that wasn't going to happen. We had one politician say, no, this is not going to happen in Saskatchewan. You're not going to have our support. And within 3 months, that same politician was in the Legislative Assembly voting for it. So that's how fast things are moving. So if any of you feel overwhelmed by how fast things are moving, even for us in the community, it's very fast. And that is hard on society because everybody has to try and catch up. And so just breathe. It will happen. We're all where we are. We're all working from where we're working at. One of the biggest things that I dealt with in the transgender community was that you have so many people that have been traumatized, so many people that have suffered for so long, so many people that have felt on the outside of society, have felt lost, invalidated, who once validated can have a lot of emotion along with that. It's like, for me, it felt like a volcano. You know, the cap popped off and all of a sudden everything that had been stuffed forever came out. And so there can be a lot of anger on the part of transgender people and people who now feel safe enough to say that they're here and that they need rights just like everybody else, and they need a space in society, and they need to be seen as normal. And so I dealt a lot with that anger, trying to help transgender people, you know, not take that out on people, especially on allies, people that are trying to help them, and open a dialogue that way. And then I also dealt with the other side of things and dealt with allies and people in the community to try and help them to understand those feelings and give space to those people and allow for that healing process to happen, because we have to find some common ground and we have to respect each other, and it is a very emotional journey for everybody involved. Gender is involved in every single part of our daily life. We don't think about it, right? But every single thing we do every day is tied to gender. And it's attached to every fiber of who we are. And so it's going to be very emotional and very difficult. And I am just grateful that there's all these open, wonderful, intelligent people here that are interested in learning more. And thank you for that. It might seem like all of this is just coming out of nowhere, that 30 years ago we didn't talk about this, even 10, 15 years ago. This, how can there be this many transgender people all of a sudden, and how can this be such a huge world topic, like out of nowhere? Well, the truth is it isn't out of nowhere. It's always been here. The difference now, we can go into history a little bit. Prior to World War II, in Germany, there was one of the greatest, most advanced universities on gender and sexuality. And the first gender surgeries were done in 1930s in Germany. And it was World War II that interrupted that flow, that progress of knowledge and understanding and education and things like that. And it wasn't until another milestone was Stonewall, in the United States, which was sort of a tipping point where people were able to fight back against oppression and exclusion and gain rights. And transgender people were at the forefront of that event as well. A lot of people don't know that. Trans women of color were very much at the forefront of that event. And that started things changing. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Get a little emotional. As a society at that point, we started having small dialogues and small things started creeping out in the media. If you go back and look at even sitcoms from like the 1970s, 1980s, Archie Bunker, you know, the Golden Girls, all those kinds of shows, the Jeffersons, they had storylines with transgender characters. They had these issues. They were not completely hidden, but for some reason things have stalled and stayed, you know, very slowly in their evolution in the last 30, 40 years. What's the change now? The change now, I think, is the internet. I think that we have so much access to information that and support. You now have a 15-year-old kid that goes, I don't know what's going on with me. Click, 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 Google. Oh, I'm transgender, or I'm this, or I'm that, or that might fit, or that feels better, or, oh, hey, here's a support group, or here's, you know, they have access to terminology. They have all of these things that I never had. Another thing that's changed things in the world is, I don't know if you remember that book I recommended, Sapiens. It's by Yuval Noah Harari, and it's called A Brief History of Humankind. In that book, he says that this is the most peaceful time that human beings have ever experienced. And it may not seem to us like it to us because we get bombarded by the news every day from around the world, but it is. And in peaceful times, people have time to contemplate things, to think about things, to deal with their own stuff. You're not just getting up in the morning and worrying about your next meal and if you're safe and all those kinds of things. So you have time to reflect, you have time to research, you have time to connect. And I think that's a huge issue, a huge change these days. I said to Joanne one time, I said, I feel like the luckiest person in the world, because if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the top of that is self-actualization. And what am I getting to do right now? I'm getting to focus on my own self-actualization. I'm getting to be who I really am. And that's incredible. And I'm one of a very, you know, small percentage of people on the planet that has that opportunity. There's a lot of trans people that don't feel lucky. it is not something that anybody would ever choose to go through. It is unbelievable what people go through on a personal level and what their families and friends go through. And for me, yeah, it was the greatest day of my life when I figured out that I was transgender because I finally had a name for it. I finally understood. I wasn't crazy anymore. This is real, and I can get help, and I can have a future where I can be healthy and happy and contribute to society, you know, once I deal with these issues. And it was also the worst day of my life, the day that somebody close to me that I had known since a small child came out as transgender, because I knew what they were going to go through. I knew how much their safety was at risk. I knew what it was going to mean at every stage of their life. I'm grateful that they're going through it at a younger age, so they don't have all the things that I went through, but they're going to have new issues because of their age. So I can't exactly give them advice. It's all new, right? I didn't go through it at that age for them. But maybe they won't, you know, get married or get into substance abuse or all these kinds of things without knowing who they really are. They can avoid some of those pitfalls along the way and have a healthier, brighter future. I actually would love to stuff that person back in the closet that came out to me and said that they wanted to transition because of my fear for them. And for me, knowing that coming out as transgender was like being able to breathe for the first time, to have my head above water for the first time, to know that feeling of freedom, to still want to push them in back in the closet means that things aren't where they need to be yet. We still have a long ways to go. And of course, I will support that person, you know, in every way I possibly can. But there's still fear there. You know, my next-door neighbors, I still haven't told them that I'm transgender. You know, I have to live beside them for the rest of my life, you know, potentially, as long as I own the house. If they have an issue with me, I don't want that to be an over-the-fence thing. So I still live in fear as much as I'm out, as much as I give speeches and in the media and things like that. I still am dealing with the repercussions of the situation. My analogy is that it's almost like being in jail. And when you're in jail, what do? You sit there and you make a list of a bucket list of things you would do if you could get out. I think that you've probably seen that in lots of Hollywood movies. And when I got out of prison, I just was overwhelmed by the numbers of people who were going through similar things as I was. I had no idea. At first, I thought I was one of a few. I was just a freak. You know, there was, you know, an anomaly. And when I started seeing the numbers, oh my God, it was traumatizing. You know, in the States, they're saying, you know, 0.7% of the population. And that's only the people that have declared. We have no accurate statistics on that because there's so many people that haven't come out. And, but when you see the numbers like that, that's millions of people in the United States, millions of people in Canada. When people in my own friends and family and immediate circle have started coming out to me, it is unbelievable. This is everywhere. And it's affecting our society in such a huge way because if people aren't healthy and connected with themselves, they're going to be self-medicating with substance abuse. They're going to be dealing with depression. They're going to be dealing with bad relationships. They're going to be failing out and not being able to achieve their potential in society. And I just can't imagine how much better things will be when all of these people are able to be healthy and reach their potential. And that's one of the reasons why I came today is because every time you have a one-on-one relationship with somebody that you meet that's dealing with something, it makes it real, puts face to it, all those kinds of things. And it helps to chip away at the barriers and create comfort and understanding. And I hope that, you know, my short 20 minutes here today didn't cover, you know, 1% of the things I wanted to talk about. But that it helps you to understand how real it is and how broad spread it is. And I just want to say I'm really hopeful. You know, I saw people, you know, even 5-10 years ago who said, as transgender people, oh, I'm never going to find anybody to be in a relationship with. I'm never going to be successful in life. I'm never going to be able to do any of the things that I want to do, even if I do come out and transition. Well, I've attended weddings in the last year of transgender people who have found, you know, the loves of their lives. I've attended graduations. I've seen so many of these people finally have the opportunity to experience life on a normal level. And when you're not feeling continually drained by the emotions and the things that hold you back as a stigmatized individual, it's amazing what you can do. And in Saskatchewan, we have a lot of organizations that are starting to develop as more and more transgender people come out. And I've provided those links to Joanne if anybody has need of them. We have everything from summer camps for little toddlers to youth, Camp Caterpillar, Camp Firefly. We have support groups for youth activity groups. We have parent support groups. We have all kinds of things available now. They're grassroots. These are individuals that are doing this, you know, out of the necessity for these things, who don't have resources, who don't have, you know, expert training, but who are making it happen because the need is there. So I guess the two big ones are Trans Ask Support Services and the Trans Umbrella Foundation. And what else can I say to close this up? I guess it was, if people want to know about what's happening specifically in Saskatchewan, what's available to them as far as, you know, ID changes and surgeries and all those kinds of things, those organizations can answer those questions instead of me going through all of that here today. It's a terrible thing that our society has evolved, that people are living in so much pain and disconnect. But it's also a beautiful thing, because we get to learn from this. Like for myself, I get to see what really matters in life. I've had to strip down all the layers of culture and religion and society and everything, the expectations that were put on me, and strip it down to what's really important in life. And to me, that's a blessing, because I feel more authentic, I feel more connected to life, I feel like I'm really living in comparison to before, when I was sort of going through the motions and just following along. And so that to me is a gift. I get to see how deep life is and how important each individual is. Now when I look at people, I don't see just the surface, I see who are you really, who are you at depth. Who would you really be if you had been totally free from the time you were born to evolve as an individual? And it's taught me a lot of humility, an incredible amount of humility. I had my own biases and prejudices that I had to go through, and I've come through those now, and I choose to see the positives, and I appreciate positive people like yourselves and this organization. And thank you for this opportunity to speak today. And I guess we're out of time.
Thank you very much. A very thought-provoking presentation. We're sort of at an advanced hour this morning, but maybe if there's a question or two, I have the talking stick.
Very much. This isn't a question, it's an observation. When Donald Trump did the let's get rid of the transgender people out of the army, a couple of things were interesting to me. One was the number of people affected and their attitudes. They're saying, like, I'm a soldier, I'm fighting for my country. Ta-da. So that was very good. The other thing was how the army responded to what Trump did. Like, they dragged their heels and they're still dragging them. And that tells me that a lot of mainstream organizations, like the Army, for God's sake, are actually not going to just go along with idiocy like that. And they're actually trying to move things forward in some sense, mm-hmm. progressively. Kind of amazing, really.
Yeah, I'm not really one to comment on politics, but when you look at it, there's two things that I would observe. One is that he's all about money. And there's a direct quote, you know, talking about how he doesn't want to pay for all the surgeries of trans people in the military. So when you look at that statement, number one, he's recognizing that there's enough of us out there that it would cost him financially significantly. So in that sense, he's you know, acknowledging how many of us there really are. And the other thing, too, is, you know, by the military dragging their heels and by other opposition and people, you know, doing things contrary to what they've been dictated to, it shows that, you know, there is a stronger wave under the surface. And I have huge faith in that. It's almost like a wound when you have an infection. If you don't open it up and clean it out, it's not going to heal properly. And I said that on a radio show, and I was told that was a little disgusting, but it's kind of true. And so maybe all of the stuff that's coming to the surface right now is necessary to create dialogue. I know so many people that have come out because of what he has done and what was done in the southern states, and people who have taken up confidence in themselves and come forward and shown the numbers and moved things forward because of that. It was almost a catalyst in a positive direction.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for this thoughtful presentation. And something that I really appreciate is that most people here would be advocates for the LGBT community. And the more we know, the more we understand people's stories, the more it informs the way that we can approach people. Or, like, I have a couple of friends who are dyed-in-the-wool fundamentalist folk, and instead of fighting against them, I introduce questions in their minds that, is this just one way? And your presentation has actually helped me sort of add to my sense of how to deal with people who actually are violently opposed to people who are different and that don't follow the binary. Anyway, it's been good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, for myself, how do I say this quickly? I don't have hatred or judgment for those people because I understand where they come from, because I came from a religious background. And I'm still friends with the missionaries from the church who saved my life, you know, when I was 19 and gave me purpose through religion and support through religion and things like that. I understand why they've developed the attitudes that they have and where they've gotten the knowledge that they have. And so for me, even somebody that doesn't hold those strict oppositional viewpoints is still so far away from what I know. I have these missing pieces inside myself that I can't share with each of you, that you can't feel what I feel, you know, you can't know exactly what I know. So how can I expect everybody to instantly be accepting and instantly understand? It's going to take time, and we have to, you know, if people are at different levels of understanding or emotions and things like that, you have to gradually work to a common point. It's a long process, and people like you, I really appreciate that you're, you know, in that space and feel that in your heart.
Thank you very, very much, Jet. We really appreciate you this morning.
Thank you for having me.